It's episode 16 of the audio production show from Music Radio Creative. I'm your host, Kyron Mountain. Thanks for joining us. And this week, I've got a special treat for you, especially if you like audiobooks or video games. We're going to dive in behind what it takes to do both those things, like live action capture for video games with the voiceover, plus audiobooks, what it takes to record and edit those. Plus, stay tuned to the end of the episode for a special contest. Kind of an amazing gentleman on the line with me today. He's got his hands in almost anything voice acting, really. He's a voice actor, he's an actor, he's an audiobook narrator. How cool is that, right? He's appeared as Monroe in the PS2 game The Getaway, Black Monday, as an animated character, narrator for Mean Machines, Lines Behaving Badly, Call Me a Cabbie, Battles of the Brides, and I'm a Celebrity. He's voiced hundreds of ILR adverts, as well as Top Dog and Abide With Me. Those are both audiobooks, and they're both currently available on Audible. Spare time interests, he includes, he's a black belt with Kamen Wing Chung Kung Fu.
Yes, it came.
So what is that about?
Kamen Wing Chun. It's, wow, I tell you, I've just broken into this introduction.
I love it. Before you answer that question, his name's Carl Jenkinson. Carl, welcome to the show. What is this kung fu I'm talking about?
Well, thank you so much. I feel like I've got so much to live up to now after that introduction. I think, God, have I really done all that?
That's your life, man. Yeah, you have.
Well, Kamen Wing Chun is an interest of mine. I got involved in doing martial arts when I was probably 7 or 8, doing sort of judo and the like. But in the last sort of 12, 14 years, I've been doing Wing Chun with a guy called Kevin Chan. And it's fantastic. It's great. I mean, it's useful as an actor, because as an actor, you're often asked to, you know, to do fight scenes and stuff, particularly if you're a physical person like I am. So, it's great. It's just lovely. You know, it's a good thing to have. And it takes your mind off, you know, the stresses and strains of...
So Wing Chun is just a form of kung fu?
Well, Wing Chun is probably best known for being Bruce Lee's original martial art. When he was in Hong Kong. He learned Wing Chun under Ip Chun. And,
so it's someone's name.
Or Ip Man, I should say, yeah. Wing Chun is the style of kung fu. It's a Southern Shaolin boxing.
Cool.
It's great. It's like a street level martial art. So it's practical and it's useful and it's good fun as well.
That's really cool. And then, sorry, I didn't get to finish your bio real quick. And you have a 9-foot-long bike, aka chopper. I love that you call it a chopper, by the way.
Yeah, that's it. I guess over your side of the world, they're motorcycles. We call them motorbikes, but motorcycle. It's a custom built chopper. Yeah,
yeah.
108 inches front to back.
So for someone who's ignorant to motorcycles like myself, how long is a bike generally?
I would think probably about maybe six foot long or something.
So this is like a third longer than most bikes.
Yeah. It's a big beast.
Does it take more to turn? Like in like park and stuff? Or I'm sure it's easy to drive on the highway or on the road. It's probably fine. It probably is a smoother ride because it's so long.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think predominantly those sort of things are kind of geared up for, you know, they came from America, although there's quite a long heritage of, you know, British bikes. But yeah, we have, I don't know, you probably don't have roundabouts in Canada.
We've got about three of them now, and they just put a new one in my town, yeah. And you know what the funny thing is? No one knows how to use them properly. Everyone
stops. Well,
that's
the same in the UK. People don't know how to use them. So
I thought they would know how to use them because that's where they came from.
Exactly, yeah. But it can be a bit interesting if you've got what they call a mini roundabout, which is short. But you just got to take your time and not fall off, because that's just embarrassing.
Well, and then you might scratch up your chopper, right?
Exactly.
Let's jump into what do you want to talk about first, video games or audiobooks? Because both really interest me.
Well, I guess if you want to talk briefly about the video game, because that's almost really where the voice acting sort of started.
So let's back up then. Where did it start for you?
Well, yeah, predominantly I was a sort of TV actor in the UK doing sort of bit parts.
Like live action?
Yeah, exactly. Okay. And, would occasionally do voiceover when required, but not really didn't really understand it as a kind of a form. But then I got cast in this video game, which was predominantly an acting role, because it was The Getaway, Black Monday.
Right.
It was a, it was a game that was filmed using motion capture technology, which was really brand new at the time. So there were cut animated film scenes where the characters obviously would tell the story, and then that would lead into the gameplay. So it was really, really groundbreaking at the time.
So, like, you're not just sitting there watching your character do this cutscene, you're literally acting it out.
Yeah, exactly. You know, the action takes place, it moves the story forward, and then as the story goes forward, you then go into the game, and you can then, a bit like Grand Theft Auto,
right.
You could steal cars, you could, because it was based around London, it was geographically correct, so you could navigate around through the streets of London. At one point, you could actually go down into the underground or the tube, the metro, you know, that kind of thing, and ride that. You know, it was really, really sort of groundbreaking at the time and had a massive following. I mean, when the game was launched, I think they pre-sold a million copies worldwide before it was launched, which was pretty staggering when you consider that, I guess, when games come out, they're probably, you know, I don't know, 40, or certainly they were, you know, 40-odd pounds a pop,
right,
you know,
right.
It's quite a big investment. But that game, you know, was 18 months in production. And I think that was maybe the first year, we're talking about 2005, I think that was the first year that the video games really overtook Hollywood in terms of, you know, sort of gross sales. I mean, it's now enormous and people understand it. But of course,
people didn't understand.
They didn't understand it at all. So that was, that kind of gave me my sort of lead into voice acting, because once I did the acting scenes, the producer then sort of got me in, and I did obviously a lot of in-game play and, you know, sort of narration and, you know, stuff. And she just did a kind of throwaway comment, which is, well, you know, you're really good at this. You know, you should get an agent. And I thought, God, do people have agents for voice work, you know? So I scratched around and started to do a bit of research, and then found that, yeah, there was a whole kind of raft of actors working predominantly as voices. And I thought, well, that sounds like it might be okay. So
what came after that? Did you start narrating for TV and then, or did you start jumping into audiobooks? Like, what?
Yeah, I mean, the first thing that I actually got, because I didn't really understand, I just went straight for what I considered to be the top agent in London, and bizarrely got taken on.
Nice.
Which was kind of quite strange, really, because I had no idea about what I was doing. And the first job I got was, you know, the show I'm a Celebrity.
I've never heard of it. No, it must be one from over there.
Well, I'm a Celebrity. It's a massive game worldwide, but it's a sort of, you know, celebrities get parachuted into the jungle in Australia, and then they're kind of left there for two or three weeks, and they have to eat grubs, and, you know, they have to do all sorts.
I'd watch that.
Yeah, it's good. It's good fun. But that is normally narrated by the previous series winner, and he wasn't well. So I literally got a call at, I got pre-warned the night before, but I got a phone call at 6:30 in the morning and said, look, can you come into the studio in London and record the highlight show, which I said, yeah, of course I can.
Yeah.
And so I bombed into town and did that. And it went out that night, and that was my first job. And I had literally no idea about what I was supposed to do. You know, I mean, I sat down and started to narrate this script. And
right.
I have to say, it was pretty awful. and the producer kind of looked at me, and I knew that she was just thinking, God, has this guy ever done this before? And I said, you know what? It would just be better if I could stand, I think.
Oh.
And they all kind of looked and said, no one's ever asked to do that before.
Really?
Yeah, exactly.
See,
because
that just makes common sense to me.
Exactly, yeah, which it did to me, but you know, generally people sit and voice, certainly in you know, in the UK, I think.
Okay.
So I stood up at the mic and then I was off, and then it was fine. It was brilliant. It was, you know, I really got a great buzz out of it. The show went out, and of course it was a high profile show, and then from there I then sort of picked up quite a lot of you know, reality TV, and you know, I did a 40-part documentary for Sky, and then things like Mean Machines and Call Me a Cabbie and Battle of the Brides and all those ones you mentioned. They've all sort of followed, you know, bit by bit, which is fantastic.
That's really cool. So, question about the whole standing thing: do you kind of make that like a requirement now? If you're going to do any work, you have to be standing. Is that like your thing?
Is it my rider?
Yes, yeah, right, right.
Along with blue M&Ms, I must stand. Otherwise, well, funny enough, I mean, at home, I've obviously got my own studio,
right?
And I've got two voicing positions. One where I stand, and all of the commercials that I do, all the sort of radio commercials and TV commercials, and generally most of the VO that I do standing. You know, just from an acting point of view, I mean, it's just you know, you can operate all your tools, and I'm talking about your physical tools, you know, properly. I have got a sitting station as well for when I sometimes read to picture.
Okay.
But generally speaking, or if I'm doing long form narration, such as the audiobooks, where you're talking about, you know,
yeah,
10 to 12 hours of narration, then it kind of makes sense to be sitting. But
yes.
But generally speaking, if I can, I will try and stand, because it's just a much better way of operating, I think.
Can we dive into audiobooks now a little bit? Is that okay?
Of course, yeah.
So
no,
what does that look like? I personally am an avid audiobook listener. I love listening to audiobooks. That's probably how I consume my books nowadays, because I'm just so busy. What does it look like? How do you get a script? Do you get to say yay or nay that you're going to do a book? How does that whole process look from start to finish?
Yeah, I mean, the last book I did, which was Abide With Me, came from a publisher that I'd worked for before, and they sent me a copy of the novel, and it was a relatively short novel. It was about 60,000 words, so about 5.5 to 6 hours finished recorded audio. And I read it, and I thought, wow, it's a fantastic book. It's, you know, a terrific read. It was a first-time novel by a guy who obviously wasn't a writer, hadn't been a writer, but he wrote in a very vernacular style. It's set in the East End of London, so it's written as people speak. So it's very
cool.
It's first person, so it's this guy. When you read it or when you listen to it, it sounds like a memoir. And of course, because it's written in the vernacular style, you get this absolute sense of this boy who grew up in the sort of 70s and 80s and was part of a very poor family and had some really terrible luck. And it's an interesting story. It's funny, it's witty, it's powerful, it's sad. I mean, there were several occasions when I narrated and I had to stop where I was, you know, I was so choked up with the kind of the emotion of the narrative. But essentially going back to what we said, I read the book, mm-hmm. loved it, and said, yeah, I'll be delighted to do it. And then you know, having done that, it was a relatively easy thing, because there weren't lots and lots of characters. There were characters in it. So you kind of you mark the script up so you can see where other characters are talking. So as you
question about that then. So when you say you're marking up the script, you get a second copy that's a script and not the book, right? Like, you're not sitting down with the hardcover book to read the audiobook, are you?
Yeah. I mean, effectively, they send you the digital file of the book.
Okay.
And then I will print that out into, like, an A4 size. So I've got, you know, the physical paper, but not a book, but the physical individual sheet. So
right.
So I sit down and I say, I'm going to narrate two or three chapters. Now some people use their iPads and obviously read that off their iPads, mm-hmm. or whatever, but I actually like the physicality of the paper script, because I like to be able to mark it up occasionally or you know, say indicate other characters or give some sort of note to myself when I've read it about how I want to you know, how I want to deal with particular scenes.
Right.
I don't do that in a great deal of detail, because obviously, if you've got 50,000-60,000 words, that you probably spend, you know, 3 months marking it up.
Yeah.
But essentially, yeah, that's what I do. I'd sit down, put the mic on, and then just record it. You know, just record it as cleanly as I possibly can. And if it's well written, and the thing is with something like an audiobook, which is, you know, as an actor delivering advertising, you know,
right.
there's a very different way of doing that. But when you're narrating a book, it's a really personal relationship with the reader. It is one-on-one, because most guys, or most people that you're narrating to, and you may have had this, is that if you've got your earplugs in and you're listening, you know, you're out jogging or you're walking, even in the car it's a slightly different thing, because it's amplified and it's into a space. But if it's, you know, in-ear listening, it can be a very, very intimate experience.
Oh, yes.
And if you're talking about dealing with you know, raw emotions and all those sort of things, it's, you know, it takes a little bit, it's a different technique, it's a different way of doing things, but it's like running a marathon, I have to say. It is hard work. If anyone wants to do an audiobook, I would recommend it, but be under no illusions, it probably will be the most difficult thing you do, because it just takes, no matter how much energy it takes a whole lot more.
Well, I've done work as a producer for, you know, 30-second commercials. I've done some, you know, I'm doing podcasting now, which are a bit longer form. I've done, you know, music specials and stuff. But I feel like audiobooks, even as a producer, would be the marathon of production, right? Because with a 30-second commercial, it's easy to listen to it a few times and make sure you don't have any mistakes in there, right?
Yeah, for sure.
And like, then as a voice actor, it's like, well, you're trying to get through it. Probably you probably in one take, right? Or as few takes as possible.
Yeah. The key to it is being able to get that flow.
Right.
Because if you literally stumble on every line, it's going to be a very long experience. So you kind of need to get, there's an element whereby you have to be comfortable enough that you can get a flow, but still spontaneously provide the, you know, the voices and the emotion. I mean, the way I approach audiobook narration is the same way as I would approach an acting role. So I don't think here is a person reading a story. When I do the character voices, I'm thinking about them as filmic dialogue. So there's a kind of a sense that it's real. You know, I try and, you know,
you're playing a character. When you read Kenny's voice, you're playing Kenny. When you're reading Eric's voice, you're playing Eric. Or sorry, John is another character in the book.
Exactly. Yeah. And the thing is, particularly with Abide With Me, is because it's such a powerful narrative and it's his voice, and you as the reader know very quickly, you know his voice. I mean, I've had people who said, you know, I read the book and now I've listened to the audiobook and it is just, and even the author, Ian Ayres. I mean, he sent me some lovely, beautiful comments, you know, and he said, you know, I'd battled with this book for months and months on the computer writing it. Those voices were all in my head, and now somebody else has taken that baton on, and those voices are now your voices. And he said, I know there was one particular scene which is very moving, and he said, I wrote the scene, I knew what was coming, and at the end of it, he said, I was still in tears, and I thought,
listening to you,
yeah, exactly, yeah,
wow. So, that's a question I've always had about it. Do you, as a voice actor, get to touch base with the author before you start recording, or is that, do you not really have much interaction?
To be honest, I didn't. I did get some email correspondence that just said, look, you know, this is what I think, and it was kind of like a brief description. But I think there is that element of, I mean, maybe with other authors or other actors, it's different. But with that particular case, I mean, I kind of knew how I wanted to do it, and I didn't, you know, it was made clear, look, if you need anything, if you want to correspond or whatever. But I actually didn't want to do that. I just wanted to get on and do the job. I have to say, though, when I did it, when I finished the audio and I sent it to him, it was with the most trepidation of anything I've ever done, because I suddenly felt this kind of weight of responsibility where, let's say, an author lives with that book for, I don't know, months, maybe years, you know, and they are intrinsically wrapped up in that. And so I think it was then that it suddenly occurred to me, I thought, hold on a minute, what if Ian doesn't like it? Yeah. What if he just suddenly goes, I'm sorry, but that's not right? And I sent it to him, and fortunately, because he was so keen to hear it, he sat down and listened to it in one go, and so I got instant feedback within sort of, you know, half a day or a day. I got this fantastic feedback, and I thought, oh wow, great, thank God for that.
That's, you know, awesome. Yeah, because I think I mean, no disrespect to creative writers that write commercials and things, but it doesn't take you months and years to write a 30-second commercial or a 60-second commercial. Where these authors, it's their baby, right?
Not for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So, like, real quick run through here. So you get the script. You're at home and you record. You don't go into a studio to do this, do you?
No, I don't. But I mean, obviously, I mean, only because I've got the facility here to do that.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, there are a lot of actors who do go into commercial studios and record audiobooks, you know, for sure.
So for some reason, I felt like when an audiobook was recorded, you'd be sitting down with a producer and the producer would be reading along with you. So do you clean up the audio or edit the audio at all before sending it off to the producer?
Well, in both those cases, I actually did. I recorded it as a self-record, so I recorded and produced the entire project.
Oh, you did all the editing too.
Yeah, for sure. Which is why it was such a task. I mean, I think if I just had the responsibility of delivering the audio as an actor, it probably wouldn't have been so bad. Because I mean, if you're doing 8 hours of finished recording material, you're probably recording for 12 hours.
Right.
But if you're producing that and you're editing and cleaning, you're probably doing that. That's probably, I don't know what, maybe 2 or 3 times that.
Well, see, I feel like when I edit someone else's podcast, it takes, so if it's an hour long show, it usually takes me about 3 hours. Would you say it's about the same with narration?
Yeah, for sure. I reckon the Abide With Me was probably the result of about 45, 50 hours work.
Wow, so that's like more than a regular person's work week.
Yeah.
So how long did it take you to do that? Like, did you spread it out over a couple of months, or did you do it in a week or what?
No, I did that. I mean, I think the whole project start to finish probably took about 6 weeks. But, I did.
Okay, so about a month and a half.
Yeah, so I think if you're doing the – because obviously I have other work as well. You know what I mean?
Right. I've got, and that's what my question was. Did you have to spread it out around that other jobs that you have?
Yeah. I mean, I think when I just disciplined myself to say, right, there are, 40 chapters. I need to record, 10 chapters a week, and I need to clean up, 5 chapters a week simultaneously. So that's what I did, is I just recorded, I did, I'm going to do 2 chapters a day or 3 chapters a day. And I think that's where you've got to be methodical, because I think the problem with audiobooks is the key is consistency. In production, it has to be absolutely consistent in terms of level, in terms of the tone quality, the quantity. Everything has to be absolutely consistent. And then in terms of your performance, it has to be absolutely consistent, because you can't go in and record in the morning and be all, lighter.
Chipper, yeah.
And then in the evening, you don't have as much energy. No, exactly.
Yeah, that's it. We don't have as much energy at night. Yeah.
That's it. So, the consistency is where the key is. And that's why I think it is like marathon running, because you can't afford, if you're doing sort of, 8 minute miles or 10 minute miles or whatever it is, they have to be that. So it's no good you thinking, I'm going to do 10 chapters tonight, because you'll just be burnt out and you'll probably end up throwing it away. But yeah, I mean, certainly. And then, consistency in the audio production, being disciplined enough to say, right, I'm going to clean 2 chapters today and do no more. And then that way you get through it. And so I think it was about 5 or 6 weeks in the end.
So that's very cool. So now let's jump into a bit more of a technical side of it. When you're doing a recording, what are you using? You've got a booth, I assume?
Yeah, I'm sat here now in the sort of recording booth part. So this is a purpose-built isolation booth. And I've got, let's say, 2 workstations. I've got 2 different mic setups. One, so when I'm doing the long form, I use a valve mic called a Sontronics Aria. Sontronics are a British company, and they're a little boutique company not very far from us, and they do absolutely fantastic mics for really, really reasonable money. I think if anyone is looking to either upgrade their mic or look at something else, the costs are just incredible for what you get. So I really would recommend that.
You said it was Songtronics, like a song?
Son as in S-O-N, Sontronics.
Oh, okay,
as in
no Sonic. G, no G.
Yeah, no G, okay, yeah, Sontronics. Cool. So I use an Aria, which is a valve mic, which is a bit like a big Neumann. It comes with its own power supply, and then that goes straight into my sound card, which is an RME Fireface. But then on the commercial side, I use a Neumann TLM-67, which is a lovely bit of kit. And that goes into a preamp, which is a thing called an LA610, which is Universal. I think it's Universal Audio, which is a classic valve preamp. So it's a transformerless mic goes into a valve preamp, and in the other and the second situation is a valve mic going into a transformer, a solid state sound card. So
okay, now excuse my ignorance here. I don't think I've ever heard the term valve mic. What do you mean by a valve mic?
Well, the valve is actually, you've got your valve for your amplification. There inside the mic is a valve.
So
it's got a preamp, and you plug the power supply into the amp. The valve inside the mic warms up, and then you get this you know, lovely, rich, resonant sound which comes from the mic. So sometimes you see valves in preamps, and then sometimes you see the valves actually in the mic. And in this particular mic, it's the actual mic is valve operated.
Oh, so kind of like okay, so kind of like tubes and stuff.
Yeah, that's it. Oh, yeah, of course, yeah, you call them tubes. Yeah,
okay, I'm not completely out to lunch then. Good. I was like, I don't think I'm going to make myself sound really dumb.
That's it. I've never heard of a valve before.
I don't know what a valve. Tube, yeah, okay, no, so it's more of an analog mic than a digital mic, is basically what you're saying.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, I only use sort of analog stuff, and then it gets converted into the digital. So
eventually,
Eventually, yeah. So, it's a really nice
It's a beautiful-looking mic.
Yeah.
And so, sure. So you put that into your computer.
Yeah.
And what are you using to edit?
I use Adobe Audition.
Perfect. Good choice.
So it's good actually. I mean, but the problem is that some voices of course come from radio production, and if they know music production, then a lot of people are using
Pro Tools,
exactly.
Yeah.
But for voices, I mean, it's just like, wow, you know, you've got the whole world in there and you just need like 1% of it.
Right.
So I think Audition's great. I mean, it does what it says on the tin, to coin a phrase.
Yep.
And you know, it does it very well. I mean, you know, I know when I deliver audio to producers, it was a great description once said, you know, I know that I've got a really clean signal chain. It's not messed about with. I don't put loads of compression on there, or I don't put anything in there, because they said, if you can give someone clean audio, that's great. He said, but if you put stuff into it, it's like trying to remove eggs out of a cake after it's cooked. Oh, it ain't gonna happen.
That's a really good way to put it.
Exactly. And I thought that was terrific.
Oh,
so,
wow.
So, you know, I always plan to give people the best possible quality audio that I can, that's clean, and then they can do with it what they want.
Because I know I've had discussions with people that aren't producers when I was working in the radio world, and they're like, well, no, you're a producer. You can just pull the lyrics out. You can, you know, just make an instrument. And it's like, I mean, I could. I know some techniques that may work depending upon the way it's mixed down, but no. And just like in your cake reference, you can't remove eggs from a cake after it's baked.
Yeah, exactly.
I like that a lot. Thank you. So now let's jump into an idea. What would be a tool, maybe not necessarily your mic, maybe not necessarily, you know, actual audio gear, that you couldn't do your job without?
Well, these days there's only one tool that you couldn't actually do your job without, and that is that's probably a mobile phone, a smartphone.
Yeah?
Yeah, exactly. Because I think what's happened is that the world has speeded up, and I did a few commercials this morning. The production company phoned me, you know, 5 to 11, can you do something at 11:30? And I mean, I could, and that was fine. But you know, without the mobile phone, without them being able to send the script through, and obviously without being close to the studio, I couldn't have done that job. And the chances are they would have gone on somewhere else. So for sure, and it's kind of a bit of a lame out, because you know, everyone says a mobile phone, you just couldn't, or a smartphone, you could not do your job without a smartphone. I mean, I've done auditions on smartphones. Bizarrely, you know, actually recorded the audio and sent it and got jobs. It strikes me as being completely mad, because it must sound awful.
But that's an audition. They're looking to see what you sound like, not what your gear sounds like at that point, right?
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, exactly. Your inflection, your intonation, and you
the
know,
delivery.
You
do, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. So, but you can't. And I think it's probably because people won't now listen to a demo and book you on your demo.
They won't.
No, I don't think they will. I mean, they will, but if it's a really big job, then they want to hear the scripts. They want to hear that you can deliver. What happens if you deliver that script? I mean, I get booked on my demo all the time, but from people who already know me and say, "Look, this is Carl. Listen to that. I think it'd be great for your product." And then manufacturers or suppliers, whatever, will listen to it and they'll go, oh yeah, that sounds great. It sounds just like what we, so that sort of thing. Yeah. But if you go into if Nike come and they've got a script, they want you to record that as a demo so they can actually hear it and play it and get an idea.
So a question for you that I know I've heard two different sides of the argument when it comes to voice acting, and some people won't do custom demos and some people will. And I know a lot of people's fear with doing a custom demo, like reading a sample script, is that they're afraid that someone you know, it's like, no, I'm not doing that unless you pay me. Where do you stand on that if you feel comfortable enough talking about it?
Yeah, for sure. No, if it comes through my agent,
right.
Through my agent, I always do a custom demo to the best of my ability. So it'll be you know, cut and cleaned up, and because it's gone through them. So I'm reliant and comfortable on the fact that they sit between me and the end user, and it's not going to get abused and suddenly wind up on the TV when I've just, you know, when I haven't given that authority to do it.
And if it does, they're the ones going to bat for you, and you don't have to really worry about it, right?
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. So in that instance, yeah, not a problem. If someone comes to me cold and says, we want you to do a custom demo, I will do it, but I will do it in such a way. I mean, sometimes people go, "Oh, yeah, you've got to watermark it," and I don't like to watermark
right.
it. But I will change the supplier's name, or I'll omit that word
right.
or something. So they get absolutely the thing, but they can't actually use.
So you might, like, if it's like a 30-second script, you're like, "I'll give you the first line and the last line."
Well, I might do. I mean, if it was a 30-second script, for the sake of it, I'd probably do the custom demo, but I would just. I would take out the supplier's name, or I would change the word order or something so it wasn't actually usable in that form.
Oh, okay. Carl, we've already gone over time. Thank you so much for coming on the show today. I really appreciate it. I've had a lot of fun today. Where can someone find you? The YouTube channel. I'm going to put a link for that in the show notes. But if someone wants to find your website, where can they find that?
Yep, they can find me on kjvox.com.
Okay.
And there's links to the stuff that I do on there. And obviously, if people want to drop me an email or, you know, whatever, get in touch, they're very welcome to. And there's various links to the YouTube and Twitter and Facebook and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, I'm techno savvy. So yeah.
Smartphone.
I'm on it. Yeah. I'm on it.
So if someone wanted to get in touch with you via the social media and such, what's probably the better one, the best one for you?
I do tend to do quite a lot on Twitter. So you can find me on at kjvox.com. So yeah, if anyone wants to do that, I know I'm always very happy to follow back and chat and do stuff. So yeah, find me on Twitter and let's do it.
Fantastic. Thank you so much again, Carl.
Kieran, it's been a pleasure.
I was just going to say, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you for giving us a little sneak peek behind the scenes of audiobooks and video games.
You're welcome.
Now, something really cool happened just after the interview with Carl, and I'll get to that just in a second, but I want to make sure that you know about a special offer. During the interview, we mentioned Audible and how Carl did all this great work with books like Abide With Me, and he was, you know, the audiobook voice of the thing. Well, I have a special offer for you. This one is for you if you're not already an Audible member. Head over to audibletrial.com/MRC. It's going to really help Music Radio Creative, but more so the audio production show and what we're doing over here. Go there. Sign up. You're going to be putting all your information in there, and you're going to get a free audiobook of your choosing. I would highly suggest Abide With Me, read by Carl Jenkinson. It's a different kind of book, but it's still, I'm really enjoying it, and it's basically you're listening to Carl some more. It's awesome. So that's a special offer if you're not already a member of Audible. But if you are like myself, then we actually have a special contest. Thanks to Carl, he did an amazing thing right after the interview. He went and talked to the people over at Audible and said, "Hey, can you do something for me here?" And he got us 5 exclusive free downloads of Abide With Me. So this is a really cool offer if you're already an Audible member, or if you're not, this is open to anyone. We're going to go over to podcast.musicradiocreative.com, and you're going to look on the page, should be the top post, should be the show notes for this episode. There you're going to find extra audio from our interview with Carl. Take a listen to that, and after you're done listening to that, there's going to be a trivia question at the bottom of the page, and if you can answer that correctly, you'll be entered into the draw for the free audiobook Abide With Me from Audible. You've got about a week to take advantage of this contest, so when the next episode goes live on May 29th, the contest will be closed. We'll be making the announcement on June 5th with that episode with the winners we have from that. So best of luck. Thanks again to Carl Jenkinson and Audible. Head over to podcast.musicradiocreative.com. Look for the Carl Jenkinson show notes and listen to that extra audio. The interview was just so good, and I didn't want to cut anything short, so that's where the rest of the interview can be found. Then just under that, there'll be a trivia question, and it'll be related to that extra audio you'll be listening to there on the website. Now, as always, head over to mrc.fm/promo. If you're looking to get some amazing audio production work done, even if you just head over there, take a snoop around, see what you can find, and they're going to have an amazing offer there for you. 15% off your next audio production purchase from Music Radio Creative. Next week on the show, I won't be doing the interviewing myself. Mike will be back. He's actually going to be interviewing the product manager for Adobe Audition. Yeah, you know, the audio, the DAW, the digital audio workstation that so many people use around the world. I use it personally myself. I know Mike's a big fan of it as well. His name is Duren Gleaves, and that's next week on the audio production show from Music Radio Creative.
Listen.
Discover.
Share your ambitions. Express your feelings.
Capture what matters.
Open the world of audio.
The world of audio.
Where everything is made to amaze.
Music Radio Creative.
Music Radio
Creative.
Music Radio Creative.
Music Radio Creative.